are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth is told. On today's show, we have Rashad Bailey. Rashad, what's going on?
Yo, what's going on, big guy? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I met you at the Las Vegas show, and I know now from the top of the show that you're the guy that won the you did the most pull-ups at the event, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. That was me.
That was you. And I don't recognize you because you got your hair all down and you threw me off. That's okay. I get fooled all the time. Hey, I was really – now, I know you go by Rock, and I'm going to assume that there's some meaning to that. Is that something that just right off the top you want to – shall I call you Rock from this point forward?
Yeah. I prefer you to call me Rock, brother, because we passed the formalities of just being people we don't know. So you know me now, so you can call me Rock.
Yeah, you can call me Leo. Some people call me like these different names, but usually not very good ones. You just call me Leo and I'll call you Rock. How's that?
That sounds perfect. For you?
Okay. Hey, listen, man, I was reading your bio. Wow, you've got a hell of a story. And so I'd like to talk about this thing. I see that you're from Savannah, Georgia, originally. Yes. Now, and you joined the Marine Corps. Now, how did you end up, where do you live now? In San Diego?
Yes, I stay in San Diego right now.
So did you go from Savannah, Georgia, joining the Marine Corps to San Diego? What was that? How was that transition like?
Well, like I was telling you, Leo, I joined the Marine Corps in 1999, August 15. Mm-hmm. Joined there and never looked back. My first duty station was in California. So
okay.
From going from boot camp to going to MCT, then after that, going to my A school that taught me my job in the Marine Corps, mm-hmm. then they station you. So
okay. So I assume now that you're out of the armed forces now?
Yes, I'm retired now.
Okay. And you stayed in California. Is there a reason why you stayed in California?
Well, yes. I actually just started to build up a new life out here. I spent 18 years in Savannah, Georgia. And I'm not going to lie to you. Wasn't the best kid, wasn't the worst, but you know, my life was no crystal stairs. Mm-hmm. And I know I needed to revamp myself. It was one of the reasons why I joined the Marine Corps.
Oh, okay. So you needed some direction, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, you know, we all think we have direction, and I was told to do things all my life, never was actually enforced to stand behind it, in a sense, I felt, to see my full potential. So I felt that the Marine Corps would actually suit that for me. It was nothing wrong with school. I just was tired of school, man. It was a break.
And you know, the thing about it is, I think just being young, you know, there's that saying, young and dumb, and you know, the youth is wasted on the young. And there's a lot of truth to that. Not everybody, but there is a lot of truth to that. You know, you don't realize sometimes, I think that most people probably don't ever reach their potential because that's a hell of a journey, you know, unless you're that one freak in nature that everything just comes easy, you know. But otherwise, you know, it's tough to reach your potential. It's a hell of a journey that you have to go on. And then when you're just a little bit off track when you're younger, the fact that you recorrected says something right there, to be honest with you. And it sounds like you used the military kind of like what I did with my sports. I was, you know, if it wasn't for sports for me originally, I mean, bodybuilding was a life changer for sure, but I was an athlete when I was really young. And, you know, and I'm not feeling sorry for myself, but my parents went through a divorce and there was just, you know, that caused turmoil. Right. And, you know, thank goodness that I had already at the age of 8, I had that athletic background because that taught me just kind of like, I'm assuming what military possibly taught you a little bit, you know?
Yes, sir.
You know, to put me on the right track. So I'm always thankful for that. But I see here that you served in both Afghanistan and Iraq. And before we go any further, I want to thank you for your service. Seriously, man, that's amazing. But I see here that you got hurt, right? So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Okay, well,
if you don't mind, I mean, if you don't want to talk about it, but since you put
I can tell you certain things I can't, you know, can't go on. But I will tell you. joined the Marine Corps, like I said, to change my life. And then next thing you know, I was on my first deployment. My first deployment was supposed to just been an easy one, but that's when September 11 happened. Ooh. So when the Twin Towers was being hit, I was in Australia. So my unit, 31st Mule, was the first unit to hit actual land in Afghanistan. So going out there, you know, you don't fear anything. You just know what you're going for. You know you're going for a reason. And I was with a great unit. And we out there and we put things together. The first time I went out there, unscathed, baby. Came back, nothing happened. But I had to go back. And each time I went back, injured myself a little bit more, into the point that they couldn't fix me no more. So, yeah, to retire, boy.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, I was, I never served in the military. Back when I'm quite a bit older than you are, but in the year before they changed the lottery, my junior year, I would have gone to the military. It's amazing how just one year, you know, how things can change your life overnight, right? In a way.
Yes, sir.
And so I never had to go, but I've thought about it before, Rock. And you know something? I would have thought that you would have been scared out of your damn mind going from, you know, well, how old were you? 18 years old, 19 years old?
Yeah, I was 18, actually, at the time.
So were you just not afraid because you were just full of yourself and you thought, no, I'm invincible like the rest of us are?
No, no, it's, you know, everybody, you know, being scared is just one part of it. Mm-hmm. But being surrounded by a whole bunch of people that was in the same like-minded situation.
Yeah.
And we had this feeling, man. That's just one thing that Marines call ourselves. We call ourselves Band of Brothers. Mm-hmm. I'm going to argue with my brother. I'm going to fight my brother. I'm going to grab my brother. But when it's time to get down, me and my brother going to get down.
Yeah.
And so when you got that many people around you, you kind of don't feel the fear, man. You know, it's, you got to hold up your part of the bargain. And, that's what you go for, man. Like, so don't understand, no stone cold killer, but I didn't have time to be scared.
Yeah. That's a good point, man. Cause I, you know, I'm asking you mainly just kind of for me, but I'm sure if I'm thinking this, other people must be thinking this as well, because I think, oh my God, you know, I mean, I did like some bar bouncing and I thought that was, you know, cause you're putting yourself out there, but certainly not like, you know, the people that are serving in the military and policemen and all that kind of stuff. And I tell you, man, that takes a lot of damn guts to do that as far as I'm concerned. But you're making me understand this in a way that kind of makes sense now. It's like you're being surrounded by a group of people. How big of a group now were you surrounded by, would you say? Is it a company?
Well, we had a little more than a company. We were going on a 31st Mule. So we're actually as a workup with four different ships that you're traveling with. You have a ground unit. We was with 1st Marine, 1st Division, URA. I was also chopped with different units, far as 361, 465, 165, and another unit was a Harrier unit that was that came in to help out. Plus, we had an F-18 unit. So we're huge, bro. It's the point of everybody has a different point. So we're all on different ships. But when we get together, you're a bunch of bad motherfuckers, man.
I bet.
Sorry about the language.
No, it's good. You're fine. Just be you. You know, and I would think that what a bond that you must have created there with all these people, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
You know, and I would like to say we brought them all back home, but sometimes you bring your brothers back home in your heart.
Yeah.
So we lost some people. On each deployment, I lost somebody. So
yeah,
and I want to say my last deployment was the only one I didn't lose anybody with my unit. So that was a good one. I went out with a good salute. But
yeah, and you know, tell me how that feels. I mean, do you feel like? Because I've heard this before. When people come back and their brothers don't, they feel a guilt because it's like, why wasn't it me and not them? Does that really happen?
Well, yeah, because you feel this certain way. I was a leader at the time. I was a leader of my division at the time. And you get pretty close to your Marines and, you know, your troops. And you, along with that, you get close to their family.
Yeah.
Well, every Marine, good Marine do. And by doing that, you make sometimes promises that you might can't always keep, like saying, oh, we're going to make sure we come home. And
right.
When that person don't come home, you have to go and see that person, you know? Yeah. So
That's
tough. You know, those are the things that, you know, that's that lays on your heart a little heavy. I, you know, like I tell most people, and I will say it to you, if you know anybody that's in the military and they having these crazy mind thoughts and stuff like that, it's nothing wrong with going to get help.
Right.
I'm one myself. I want to get help. And the reason why I didn't know I needed help because I'm around a whole bunch of people that think the same way I do.
That's right.
You know, so I don't think nothing wrong with me. I think something wrong with you. After a while, you start seeing your family kind of scared of you, and then you got to realize you got to take that step back and like, yo, let me get some help.
Yeah,
so
it's pretty true.
All in all, I had some really good doctors, man, very good support as far as my family.
Yeah.
And, you know, this new lifestyle that I have, man, you know.
And I would almost think that I'm going to move on from this. I just wanted to talk about this because this is seemed like it's the first thing that you listed here. You know, people usually put down stuff in the order in which things are important, even if they don't know that. And so I just want to really make sure that we talk about this as much as you want. We're going to move on here because
one thing
that I wanted to say to you, I almost feel like, and again, I'm comparing an apple to an orange here when I'm saying this. So keep that in mind. You know, my parents, they went through a divorce when I was 5 years of age. For me, that was traumatic because it wasn't handled right. There's various reasons for that. But let me tell you how that scarred me a little bit. It took me a long time before I could let myself, I always had like a protective screen in front of me. If that's the metaphor that I can use. I would not really, after that happened with my mom and dad, because that was that was my foundation, you know. After that happened, Rock, I was very hesitant about being vulnerable ever again. And I guess the reason why I'm asking that question is that when you are losing your brothers over there, when you're coming back, is it hard for you to, because I would imagine that you have to be all in and be there for them. And if you're going to be kind of the standoffish guy in that unit, I mean, is that even possible?
No. This is one of the reasons why a lot of us have to actually get help from desensitizing ourselves from these type of environments. When you're in an environment such as the one I was in, you're emotionless. It's all about the odor. It's all about the mission. It's all about the movement.
Yeah.
By you being emotionless, you notice emotions. So you can handle emotions as a problem solver. It's like it has a math problem now because your emotions are not attached. That's what makes it harder to answer a question because your emotions are so involved. Well, the military, especially Marine Corps, I can speak for that, they teach you how to suppress those emotions.
Amazing.
But doing that, you become really good at it. And then you don't know how to use them again when you get back to regular people, and then you have to get taught.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had a lot of ups and downs in my life, and I love every moment of it because it allowed me to revisit those emotions that I abandoned for so long. I didn't even think about those emotions because why do I need that? You know, I'm a man now.
Right.
But this man have kids.
And I would think that when you're able to get to that part where you can actually revisit those and deal with that, I think that for me, and again, I'm not a shrink. I just think I am because I work with people in my training studio. But I think that when you get to that point, it seems like you're really, maybe you're not 100% healed because maybe some of those scars will never go away. But it sounds to me like you've healed. Now you're in that healing process. Am I correct about that or am I wrong?
No, it's first things first is accepting and knowing that you are going through something. And after that, once you accept it and know it, you try to be better. That's the competitive spirit that I think that drives us to be good humans. You know, once we see that this race is for us and how we can win the race, and hey, man, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, so, exactly. Well, you know, like I said, I'm comparing an apple to an orange. Like with my, I carried that stuff around that happened with my mom and dad for lots of years because it wasn't handled properly and I suppressed it and I had outlets for it, but I never really dealt with the issue, you know?
Right.
And what I started learning about myself was that I kept self-destructing in various ways. And I actually self-destructed in my first marriage. And it had a lot to do with, you know, listen, my parents did the best they could. I'm not holding them, you know, there's no problem with that. It's just, I'm just telling you what happened. And until I dealt with the root of the problem, you know, I was always, this thing would flare up and it would just show its ugly head in different ways. And with me, it was sabotaging my own relationship and my first relationship because I just didn't have shit figured out, you know? Yeah. Anyway, I commend you, you know, for that. But I want to move on. Now, in your bio, you talked about you got hurt over there, that you were, say, strictly limited by doctors on your physical activity. So tell us a little bit about what happened to you, if you don't mind.
I endure a bad ankle injury, and a bad knee injury, and a back injury. Can't really explain in much of how I got these injuries, yeah. But after I got those injuries, there was some other things that came up. I was diagnosed with epilepsy.
And you never had that before?
Nah, I never had it before.
So is it a result of whatever you went through at that point that you actually?
They don't know. Yeah. So when I got back, you know, I was having seizures, spawned by migraines and stuff like that. I kept going back and forth. I was still going through the thing with the with my ankle and my back, and you know, it came to the point. It was like, we can't stop the seizures. They put me. I was on so many different medications. It was crazy.
Wow.
And that's when they had to retire me.
But you I was said 25 at the time. You said you were in braces. Why were you in braces over?
Well, my ankle was hanging on by one tendon.
Oh, okay.
The outside appearance looked good, but the inside, I only had one tendon holding my foot and my foot to my ankle.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to wear a brace. And being in the sand out there, I don't know if you'll walk, you know, you walked on a beach before. Every time you walk, your ankle kind of twists and kind of move and kind of do all kind of stuff. So that's one of the things with that. That transferred to overcompensation with my knee.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had to bend on something, so I was bending on one. And then we kept taking rounds. We kept taking, you know, they didn't stop because I was hurt. So, you know, I had to move. I had to do certain things. And by moving and relocating and stuff like that and doing what I had to do, you know, I injured myself a little bit more. But my blessing is I came back home. So
yeah. Yeah. Boy, does that put that all in perspective?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It could be a lot of things we could talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then at that point, then you knew that you had to start sort of a new, maybe a new direction in your life. Is that correct?
Yes.
A new journey. You're calling it a new journey and a lifestyle. So, and I see that you started going to the gym. Now, at that point, had you ever been introduced to the gym and worked out?
Oh, yes. I was a sports head like you. I'm from Savannah, Georgia, man. That's a football town. Football. I was in almost every sport that you can name. I even played volleyball and tennis. So, so it was a point of I was allowing my youth to help me get through the world. I'm not gonna lie to you. Just a natural athletic ability would allow me to pass PFTs. So when I go to the gym, it's really not really concentrating as much as I'm doing right now as far as kinesiology, understanding the squeeze and release of the muscle, breathing control, stuff like that. I didn't really start getting into that until they told me I couldn't go no more. They said, when somebody say you can't do something, some reason you wanna do it more than anything. And that's what turned on to me.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing what the mindset can do, you know, because I know exactly what you're talking about. Just tell me that I can't do something, and then you just caused a big fucking war in my head.
That's what I'm talking about.
if for no other reason, I'm just going to do it to prove you wrong, you know.
Yes.
But so I know I can relate to you. So you said that you started going to the weight room. Did you have any kind of strategy in mind when you went to the weight room? Because I know you're saying here that you were trying all kinds of different exercises. But what was your, at that point, your mindset and your strategy when you went to the gym? Because obviously you needed to fix yourself to some degree. So what was your, I always say that you have to have a stated goal. So I'm assuming that you had a stated goal. And can you tell us what that was?
Okay. I started off with three goals. I had three goals I wanted to do. I want to do my first goal, second goal, and then the maximum goal. What I see my outcome to be. First things first is to get myself to a proper way I can actually walk regularly. That was my biggest, that was my biggest thing. I noticed that was mentally destroying me. Physically, it was nothing truly wrong with me. It was just me beating myself up.
Right.
So what I did was I started conquering small exercises. As much as everybody want to go out there and lift like 315, no, I was doing something a little different. I'm going to beat my last set that I did last time. Mm-hmm. So my set started from sets of 10, then sets of 13, then sets of 15. Then each set, and everybody thought it was ridiculous, was I was going up to prove that my body can still, you know, move.
Yeah.
Right when I did that, everything started to respond. So mm-hmm. now my next one is to get strength back. Not the strength that I used to be at, the just strength of where I'm not at right now.
Right.
So I did different types of workout. I did some research and found out my body type. Found out what my body type was because for a long time, no one has ever told me that there were body types I'm supposed to be actually working out for. Learned and seen how my body type was going to work as far as different types of workout and putting them in different patterns. Mm-hmm. That allowed me to lose weight because, like I said, that medicine I was taking was making me gain so much weight. Mm-hmm. So it was allowing me to lose weight and build muscle at the same time because I was adding a cardio inside of my workout. Then after that, then it's a real test. The last one was, what can't I do now? And that was my last goal. And I'm still working on that one.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out what I can do.
So I'm going to take you back because, again, I can relate to you and I'll tell you how I can in this. I think this is closer than an apple and an orange. And how I'm going to relate to you on this one here, because I had an injury myself. Okay, so tell us. Okay, you just came out of the Marine Corps. You're torn up your knee, your ankle. You take us back and maybe from the start, because I want to know your goal. In my mind, was to walk right again. Okay,
yes.
So you take me to that. At that point, I'm assuming that you're limping. There's you have an unnatural gait. Would I be right about that? Okay.
Yes, that and a brace arm.
Okay, so how in the world, do you still have to have that brace on your ankle?
Nope.
Okay, all right. So why don't you start, let's start right there. I want you to tell the people that are listening to this or watching this, how in the hell did you go from not, and take me back to the beginning, how did you start that process by which you, because obviously you just didn't walk into the gym from one day to the next and you're walking perfect. That didn't happen, okay?
No, sir.
So how did you actually, which did you address first? Did you address the ankle or the knee or both? How did you deal with that? And what did you do? What was the first exercise that you did to start that process of you walking better?
Okay. The first thing I did to actually to break everything down was I attacked the ankle.
Okay.
And I stopped depending on the brace. That was the first thing I realized I needed to do. I was dependent on an outside source that I have to keep rebuying. It didn't make any sense to me. So I said, I need to walk better. So the first exercise I did was take the brace off and walk with no brace. The first exact exercise I did, brother.
Smart thing.
Yeah, not gonna lie to you. And I did it in steps. So I noticed that the gym is a limited space, right? So instead of me being able to walk a long distance, and I didn't want to walk a trail and get stuck and then have to crawl back,
right?
I just did steps. So a lot of my steps was 25 steps. Next step, 35 steps. Next step, 45 steps. And then that allowed me to increase. And then next thing I saw you using walking up the stairs that they had in the gym. Not all the stairs, but just the stairs that was in there.
Yeah.
Then I did core workouts. So along with my working out legs, I did core workout. And the core workouts increased my balance. So my balance increasing, I wasn't worried about wobbling over and all this other stuff. And then my other muscles was getting a workout because they had to be strengthened. So from there, I used the elliptical machine and the bike. They became my best friends. The elliptical machine was allowing my ankle to move in a natural state, not over-exaggerating it. So if I would get on a treadmill, you know, your natural step will come in. Well, I didn't need that. I needed something that's going to be controlling, but right, still actually test me. So I used the elliptical machine. Then from the elliptical machine, I tagged it in with the bike. And then with the bike, I tagged it in with squats. And I did those in a circle of rotation. Mm-hmm. And I started noticing all these exercises was allowing me to be confident in my lower body, The core, which was every time I was squeezing, you know what I mean? The bike was allowing me to sit up and actually control my breathing and build my cardio. And the elliptical machine was allowing my hips and my back and everything else to get attached to it as we're trying to work out those small muscles around the ankle.
Yeah.
When I knew my ankle started to grow is when I was able to do, like, just get on my tippy toes. I wasn't able to even do that.
Yeah.
So I did calf raises. You know, and that was my next exercise that I was like, yeah, look at your boy, yeah. Your boy doing calf raises. So, you know.
Some people might think you're just a nut, but that means, you know.
It's all, right?
All yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, I'm so tall. I'm like 5'3", jumping around, happy.
Yeah.
And from there, brother, then I started attacking the knee because I knew I needed to work at the bottom half of it before I can even work at the top half of it, just structurally.
Yeah.
The knee was a little more tricky because I didn't want to tear anything. I know it was already overworked because I've been compensating for a long time.
Right.
So now, instead of like beating this knee up, I strengthened the other knee. So right. I countered my workout. So I did a lot of single press on the leg press machine. So I did a lot of leg single press just to make sure that I'm getting true lifts off of each leg. I don't want nobody helping nobody out.
Right.
Almost kind of like, you know, the bench press where you can kind of cheat a little bit. I didn't want none of that. I wanted everything to help out. Did that. Next thing you know, doing double press. Still stayed off from the squats for a while because I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to recover fast enough to get out of the way because the whole mission was not to hurt myself.
That's right.
So I kept doing leg press and leg extensions. And next thing you know, I started my first jog, which was, I'm not gonna lie to you, bro, I cried when I finished.
I understand.
It wasn't because of the pain. It wasn't because of I was tired. And I didn't even go that far. It was the point that I was leaving the deck, man.
Yeah.
I had doctors after doctors after doctors telling me, you would never be able to lift your body weight. You would never be able to squat how much you do. And you would never run 3 miles again.
Yeah. That's a good lesson that you learned there. Let me, if I can pipe in, because you really answered my question exactly how I wanted you to answer that, because I think it gives the people a true understanding. You know, it wasn't just like from 1 minute to the next. It took a hell of a lot of hours in the gym.
A
lot of concentration, you know. So here's what I'm learning from you is that you're a very instinctive human individual. And a lot of times, instinct is beaten out of us in various ways, you know, and you're highly instinctual and you just kind of felt this is what you had to do. I mean, you know, even to the point where when people wear belts in the weight room, forget just the regular person who has not been hurt. When they're using belts and they're using wrist straps, all they're doing is weakening the area. And you identified that when you had that crutch, which was known as the brace. You know, it has good intention, but it's given you some really, you know, some bad result because it just keeps weakening the area. And you realize that, you know, that was smart that you did that. And the other thing that you are telling me that you did is that your focus obviously was not to get hurt, but it was even more than that. Your focus was to make sure that whatever you were doing right. Instead of, like you said, instead of going to that, you know, big bench press or whatever, you took the time to build that foundation. You know, I talk about this all the time with people. My background is in sports-specific training. It's in, you know, bodybuilding. I cover the whole gamut. I've trained professional athletes in different areas. I've trained people who have been hurt in accidents. And so I had to learn this thing from a spot where, you know, you have to understand how the physiology works. And you learn that because of some of the stuff that you were doing. And it's kind of like, and maybe you've heard this analogy, setting up a training regimen, no matter what it is, if it's for somebody like yourself who is rehabbing in a way to get to 100%, you have to develop a foundation for everything else to be built on. It's kind of like a house. You don't put the roof on before you put the walls on and the foundation. It's the reverse of that.
Exactly.
And you know something? And the thing about it is, the hard part, and people have no clue. Most people have no clue how dedicated, especially you, because you are overcoming these brutal injuries, how much dedication and how many hours and how strong of a mindset that you had to do that. So I'm going to tell you that I commend you for doing that, because most people just will never have a clue as to what you really went through, especially because of your injuries. That's huge. How I can relate to you, and I'm not going to belabor me, but I just want to tell you how I can relate to you. 8 years ago, as of February the 13th that we just passed, I had three strokes in 3 weeks 8 years ago that paralyzed me. And here's a guy that has been in bodybuilding and an athlete all of his life. How in the world did this happen to me? I mean, I was in a really dark spot, you know? And again, if it wasn't for bodybuilding, I would have never recovered like I did, because I did. And it was just, I did the same things. The doctor said, you shouldn't be alive. You know, the problem with the doctor sometimes, even in my industry, because only 10% of people who have these strokes ever make a recovery. Of the ones that do, only make almost a 100% recovery. Some of the reason for that is that doctors are telling them that after a certain amount of months, it's done. You're done. There's no more progress that you can make. And you know something, unless you have a athletic background or mindset, then, and you just believe that, you're done. And I saw it happen, Rock, because I wanted to find out how I was able to do this and why those people weren't. And some of that was just that they had the lights turned off on them because they didn't have this mindset that I did. And especially bodybuilding, because bodybuilding was just, it took me to the next level as far as, it takes a long time to get a body that's aesthetically beautiful and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yes, sir.
So I understand. See, this is how you and I have something that I can really relate to, because I had what was known as drop foot, and I had a gait that was off, man. I mean, I was dragging my ass around. I was paralyzed on the right-hand side. My arm didn't work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and to be in the sport that I was in, that you're me, I'll speak for myself, narcissistic, very, very concerned about how I look, especially how I walk. I mean, fuck this, man. I didn't want to go out in public. I didn't want people to see that shit. No, I didn't. I started my rehabbing in my backyard because I didn't want my neighbors to see what happened to me. That's just how bad it was, right?
Right.
And I learned all this stuff. Now, when I was, I went to Bulgaria back in the late 80s, and I studied with the national teams, the Olympic teams from Bulgaria, Russia, and all these guys were way ahead of everybody during that time. The Bulgarians were amazing. I mean, here's what I learned from them. The body becomes its function. You taught your body what you wanted it to do. You were being very specific to a goal. And that's Wolf's Law. They call that Wolf's Law. Over time, with a regimen, you teach your body. If you teach it that it needs to have braces on, it's going to adapt to that environment. Yeah. You learn that. I got a feeling you learned this all instinctively. Is that right?
Yes, sir. You
and I now are talking more of the same language than you even think. But let's just keep talking about you. All right. So, I just want to let you know that I'm right there now. I'm not an apple and an orange. I'm closer to the
that's
apple.
What I'm talking. We're in the same basket now.
Yes. We had some shit that we had to overcome, and it took everything. It took heart. It took soul, and even more than that, for you to get back to where you were. So I want to make sure that I know what you put into this thing, man. Okay, so you started learning about this this lifestyle, and then you competed in your first bodybuilding competition. So my question is, how did somebody dare you, or how did you know, what made you decide, because a lot of people do this, what made you decide?
Right, you pretty much knocked it on the head right there.
Who challenged you?
I was training one of my athletes. I had him in the gym, and he's one of those guys that like to look in the mirror, kept looking at himself, flexing and shit. Yeah. And I said, man, you should get on stage with all that. And you know, the coach of Marines, he looked at me, he said, if I get on stage, you get on stage, bitch. I'm like,
oh.
Okay, well, I guess we getting on stage. And he didn't realize I was going to hit back like that.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, we're going to get on stage then. So he was like, oh, man. And we started training. Next thing you know, people seen us in the gym. And when I started my team, it just kept growing bigger and bigger. Every time we work out, of course, we had to work on different types of ways of working out now, because we're bodybuilders. You know, so right. I'm getting them ready to go on to a show. So squeezing of muscle and really, really, really posing and stuff like that. We really got down. And next thing you know,
some girls came up and they asked us the same thing. What are you guys getting ready for? I said, well, we're going to go to Muscle Beach.
Yeah.
It was like, for what? Competition.
Yeah.
And the girl said, I always wanted to do it. I said, well, join a team. And next thing I know, I had 7 to 8 people on this team about to go do my first bodybuilding show.
No kidding.
And it was crazy.
Oh, my God. That is crazy. Especially considering the fact that you didn't know what you're doing, really.
Not a thing. I did most of my research for posing everything online. And no, I'm lying. I actually reached out to a couple of my bodybuilding friends, and they showed me some things that I can work on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they actually did me a solid by coming out and giving a whole class on just, you know, regular basic posing. He said, yeah, you know, nothing too extreme right now. You guys are amateurs.
Yeah.
So it was more about stage presence. So I think I took one of the things that you said you did. You think you're a psychiatrist, you don't get paid for it. I was doing the same thing because, you know, when it gets closer to show, people call you, they're nervous.
Oh, man. Oh, my
God, dude. I got crying on the phone.
Oh, yeah. It's drama.
I was like, what are you doing? Like, you know, but it became an amazing mission. And I placed third in that show. And my guys did amazing.
That's crazy. This is Venice Beach, right?
Huh?
Is this Venice Beach where you compete at Muscle Beach?
Yeah. Venice Beach.
Yeah, I used to live at a hotel right there, right where you competed back in the late 80s. I had moved down there, and I was living what we call the bodybuilding lifestyle, you know. And the Gold's Gym was just about 3 blocks over, and, you know, so I live in the hotel. So I know exactly where you are. I love that area. But the thing that's amazing to me is that nobody has information, and you guys are all competing as a team. I mean, everybody was experiencing this thing for the first time in their lives to go compete. That's crazy.
Yeah, everybody was throwing. Once I rendered to them, I said, yo, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I've never done this before in my life. I know how to work out. I know how to get bodies right. But as far as any of this stuff, if you got some information, let's throw all the information together and let's figure this shit out. And you should have seen the response off of that. That was the most, I think I said the coolest thing in the world, because I became the generated, they just kept bringing me everything. You think I employed all these people. They went out, I think I know what we should eat. Look at this. And then they'll all send it to each other and try to prove each other wrong. So we came down to what we needed to be. And, you know, as far as body types and stuff like that. Oh my God, dude. By the time I got out there, I felt like I went to a class to be a bodybuilder.
You know, it almost sounds like the way that you guys all bought into each other. It almost sounds like the unit that you were when you were like in the military. You guys were all together, all in the same boat, and you all bonded that way, right?
These are all military people. So it was kind of worked out. Yeah.
Okay, so you took third place.
Yes.
Okay. And how do you think that now that you've been competing now for, like, that was, what year was that?
2015.
Okay, 2015. And then, so since then, you've competed how many times? I want to go back to how your condition was back then compared to now. So how, you know, your first show, when you look back at it, did you come in pretty damn good shape?
I came in pretty good shape, but I was built like a brick. You can see the muscle. You can see all the stuff. I didn't know how to pose. So I hit a lot of my muscles because I was standing like I was in formation. Like I was standing in that position of attention. Like I made a right face and shit. Like,
turn
right. I mean, I'm popping and locking and shit too, bro.
You should say, who the fuck is this guy up here? That's pretty funny. Unbelievable. Oh my God. Okay, so that was quite a learning experience, wasn't it?
Yes,
and it was. I don't know about you, but it sounds to me like when I first competed, it was mainly because of an old schoolmate of mine. I was always in shape as an athlete, you know, and then one day football was over for me. And I was like, what the fuck am I going to do now? I mean, so many years that I played the sport, you know, and now I'm on a family dairy working. Rock, I got in the worst shape of my life at the age of 27, you know, because all I was doing was working. And my until my old high a schoolmate of mine, he hadn't seen me for a lot of years, and he saw me. He said, "What the hell happened to you?" I said, "What do you mean? You know, you get in denial. You know, you know how that goes, right? I'm not so bad. I don't look too bad. I'm in denial. And anyway, see, when he said that shook me. I go, "What do you mean?" She said, "Why don't you start working out, lifting weights?" I had never lifted weights to that point, because believe it or not, in 1973, 78, and through there, I played quarterback. The guys that played this, they call it specialty positions, the coaches didn't want you in the weight room. That was for linemen back then. Believe it or not, it was that thinking, right? Okay. So I didn't know anything. So I went out and I bought these muscle and fitness magazines and all these, you know, that's how I learned it. Okay. I built my own equipment because I knew how to weld, being on a dairy and a farm. I welded my own equipment, put it, it's like, it looked like shit from the prehistoric days, but you know, somehow it worked. But I have to tell you something. I got all of a sudden in 6 months' time, it's like, I said, "Oh shit, I like the way I'm looking and feeling." But I'll tell you when it changed is when my business partner to this day challenged me, because I outgrew my home gym and I went to the local gym down the road. The guy that was the trainer at that gym ended up becoming my business partner to this day. And he's the one that said, "You ought to compete," because he saw how, like, I worked hard, you know?
Right.
When I did that first show, maybe you were this way. When I did that first show, that changed my whole life forever, because I had a bug that bit me like no other bug has ever bitten me to this day. I said, "Oh, fuck yes, I'm going to do this again."
Yeah.
Is that the way it was with you?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not, bro.
I misread this.
It did not do the same thing. Actually, it made me like, I looked at it and I was like, I thought I was looking good this whole damn time. And I need to go back to the gym. And it actually put me in a place of looking at fitness different.
Okay.
And I'm not gonna lie to you. I was like, what do they know? They don't use their muscles. I'm a real athlete. I play ball and shit. Yeah, then man. That was a hater all in me right there, right? That was all a hater. Okay, let me quit being a punk and let me try it out. And actually went home and I talked to my wife about it. She's actually one of my best friends, man. We talk about all kind of stuff. She's also a big part of this lifestyle thing. And I told her, I'm like, "Hey, I'm thinking about doing some more bodybuilding shows. How you feel about that?" She looked at me. She said, "I give you 3. I said, "You give me 3? She said, "If you don't like it in 3, you're going to walk away from it and you're going to laugh. And you're like, ha, 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 I shouldn't have did it in the first place."
Yeah.
I said, "It's going to take 3. She said, "It's going to take 3.
There's your challenge.
And that's, you see what happened? I'm like, she can't tell me what to do.
It's
her
fault.
Right when I did my second one, I got that feeling.
Yeah.
I walked into the building, brother, and I'm not gonna lie to you, it felt like the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I walked in there and I heard music, but no music was playing.
Yeah.
You know, I felt a rhythm. And I just felt like I was the coolest guy in the world. I mean, my soul and everything was so good. I was just like, man. And I see all these big guys around me, and I'm like, you know, no intimidation. You here to compete against yourself.
Right. There you go. Smart guy.
Yeah, man. I took my shirt off. And like I said, you can be your worst enemy. I took my shirt off, and I had the guy I was looking at when I first walked in. All these big guys I'm looking at came over and talked to me. "Yo, how you do that?
Yeah.
What's this? Who you? Who you what? Hey, come talk to my, come over here, talk to us for a second." And I said, "Oh man, you can do this." Yeah. And that's when I bit the shit out of me, man.
Nice.
But bit me, and I say, "Now this is a place I can actually show my formula, show my theories of how I think fitness can be actually used with all different types of body styles."
Yeah.
So I get blank canvases from people, and they're coming to me.
Right.
And guess what? Now I got a place to see, yo, boom, I told you it works.
Yeah. Look at you. So. You know, and the thing about that is, which I didn't know, bodybuilding taught me just, it saved my life, especially after I had these strokes, but it taught me so much. And what I didn't know that bodybuilding was a creative act. I didn't know that until I started getting on stage and realizing that what you said really hits home. It's like my body is a block of clay. And it was up to me to transform it in the way that I chose. And that gave me power. That gave me a feeling of, hey, like you said, I can just totally relate to what you're saying, you know? And the same thing happened to me when I was in the, listen, when I stopped playing football, and I was a pretty good athlete. I had a chance maybe to go on to the next level. I had some injuries, and I talked myself into, this is at college level, I talked myself into the fact that I thought, well, you know, maybe these injuries are like a signal for me to get out of the sport before something really bad happens. I talked myself into that. And it was a really huge, at that time, excuse me, it was a really huge mistake that I made. And I went to the dairy business because that was safer at that time in those days, you know, it was a family business. There were reasons right. I did that. But what I really realized after I got out of the football is that I made a mistake, you know, and I promised myself, because sports always gave me buzz. I love being an athlete. Yeah. And when all of a sudden I was a dairy boy, it wasn't really in my blood. And I knew at some point, man, I fucked up, you know, and all I could do at that point was say, if I ever get a chance to do something again that gave me that rush and that buzz, and I know you know what I'm talking about, I'm not going to question it. I'm going to jump. And when bodybuilding, when I did that first show and it did that, because up to that point, people were coming up to me and asking me a lot of questions, you know, how I'm doing these things. And Rock, at that point, at that first show, and keep in mind, back in those days in my town, not one person was doing any kind of personal training, not one. Wow. You could go to Fresno or Bakersfield or some of the bigger cities, but not one. And when I had that buzz, I went home to my wife. And I said, I have some news for you. What? I have two kids at this point. They're little. I said, I'm going to leave the dairy business. I'm going to start doing personal training. She about had a nervous fucking breakdown right there in front of me.
I can imagine.
I have to tell you something. It was a pretty selfish act in some ways, you know, when I did that. Because I could, now I understood a lot more as time went on how she really felt. I mean, she was worried that how in the world are you going to make a living and, you know, doing something that no one's doing in your town? But Rock, at that point in stage of my life, that didn't even matter to me, because I knew that I would overcome that. I just couldn't let myself down again, because I promised myself if I had that buzz again. And I tell you something real quick, because I want to get back to your story. Here's a good story. That changed my life forever. I became a full-time personal trainer 38 years ago, and I've never turned back. I've had a facility. Anyway, that's my little story.
I like that.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's go back to you again. All right. Now, so when you're giving this a second look, so what kind of changes did you make, you know, to keep improving yourself?
Learning what I was putting more in my body. Like I say, being an athlete, you learn how to fuel your body.
Yeah.
But learning how to build your body is a little different when it comes to bodybuilding. So I was going against my workout by the things I was putting in my body. I wasn't giving it enough food at times, and at times I was giving it too much of the wrong things. Mm-hmm. And my cardio. I raised my cardio up a little bit more to get those actual striations to actually really, really pop. My conditioning was good for an athlete, but wasn't good to show everything that I was trying to show.
Right.
So that's what I started working on. Yeah. And each show I improved. And, you know, but every time you improve, you also see what you can improve at again.
Right.
So, you know, after I started hitting all those things, was enjoying it. And what made me really keep going wasn't because I was winning trophies or became a pro and all this other stuff. It was people telling me that they watching me.
Yeah.
They want to be better.
Yeah.
they can relate where I came from. They, oh man, remember, you know, even from childhood friends, man, we grew up together, man. So I know you can do it. I can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Some people using my injuries and everything that I went through as saying that, oh man, you had that. Mine's not that bad. So I know if you can do it, I can do it.
Yeah. You know, you know? In my opinion, that's the biggest compliment that you could ever get. I think you probably know that because it's happened to me too. People say, you don't realize how much you have turned me around, you know,
yeah.
From your actions and the stuff I watch you do, you become a huge, huge inspiration for people. And I don't know about you, man, but sometimes you just, you know, sometimes we just take for granted certain things and you don't realize how you impact people. And you've done that, obviously, you know, because of what you come, where you came from. And that's like the, one of the best things that you could do, man, when you turn people around. That's awesome, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, man. And then, Leo, the crazy part about it, man, I thought I was being selfish.
Yeah.
I took everything and was just doing all this for me.
Yeah.
This was all about me. I'm not gonna lie to you. So the more selfish I was, I think I was my selfishness made me be honest and project what was going on because I was putting my all into it. It wasn't my boasting or anything like that. So when I got that compliment, you know, like you said it yourself, I couldn't believe it. Yeah. And I was like, that's what I gotta do. I just gotta keep being selfish. Oh shit, yeah. I can be selfish.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's amazing. Now, so then you ended up like competing at all these levels, MPC I see here, and mm-hmm. Then you found, I guess, the IMBA, PMBA. Is that, how did you find that organization?
Well, doing a couple of MPC shows, doing some of the Venice Beach shows, you hear all everybody reason why they didn't win. You know, oh, they're this, they're this, they're this. Oh, whatever. So I bounced around because I wanted to see if all the story was the same.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, I'm going to do a different organization. Did Lauren Powers, NPC, did another AAU.
Yeah.
So I've been bouncing around. And what the end point of the whole thing I found out is, where are you comfortable at? There's problems in every organization.
Yeah.
There's politics in freaking majority of the organizations.
Oh,
but guess what? Where you feel comfortable at? Where you gonna lay your head down at?
Yeah.
As much as we buy a beautiful house, you can't stop crime for being around your beautiful house. Guess what? You gonna keep moving just because shit happens? No, you try to improve it. Right. I found an organization that was willing to listen. The IMBA, PMBA is the closest I've got to having my voice and my opinion. And actually have my opinion, you know, looked at, evaluated, you know what I mean? Taken serious. Knowing that I don't have to donate thousands of dollars for a person to say, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Definitely nothing against other organizations and nothing like that. They have some beautiful people in those organizations.
Yeah.
I have friends that still compete in those organizations. So I can't be over here being a hypocrite. But what I can say is where I like to be at.
Yeah,
I like to be in a natural organization where people got the same playing fields I do, and I have a platform that I can actually give off good information to kids, adults, people going through things without any corruption of any other kind of drugs because we piss test.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to reach a big group of people. So I picked an organization that allows me to do it.
Well, I tell you what, you know, when I was there at that booth, that was the first booth that I had done since the late 80s. The last booth that I did was at the Arnold Classic. And I competed like you at all these organizations, you know, and I got out of the industry for 13 or 14 years. I wrote a bunch of training courses, our company did, and we decided to get back in again we still have that passion for doing this stuff, you know. Okay. And my way back in was to start podcasting and to start bringing back some of the people that followed me back in my heyday. And then, of course, the next thing we wanted to do was be more visual. So we decided to just randomly. Well, it was kind of random because I used to run ads in Iron Man when John Balik owned it. Denny Kekos, I'm sure you know Denny and his wife and the mm-hmm. family. Of course, they took it over. I was intrigued by that because I had run a bunch of stuff and did a bunch of work with business with the former owner. Well, the minute I talked with Denny and Diane and Denise on the phone, I knew these guys were they were coming from the right place, you know. And I was that guy that was training. I trained natural when I began, but I trained unnatural, you know, for quite a few years of my career.
Okay.
And so I did both ways, and again, I don't condone it, but I just, you know, I'm pretty neutral on that. So, you know, if it's whatever floats your boat, it's good with me too.
Same here.
But when I talked to these guys, I thought, okay, Mr. Olympia just so happened to be the next show that was coming up. So we fast tracked this thing and put together, as you know, a pull-up bar, and we had this booth over there. And I got to tell you something. And I said it at the event. I don't know if you heard me talk at the when I handed out the
yes.
Yeah. Okay. For the pro event. Mm-hmm. When I was sitting there in that booth, I kept thinking, "This, there's something different going on here that I can't really put my finger on it, you know." And I really liked it, and I couldn't figure out what the hell it was. Well, first of all, every athlete that I met there, every person that I met there, and I'm not exaggerating. I think you can back me on this, although I've been wrong once here in our interview, but everybody that I was talking to, these guys were there for the love of the game. They were willing to talk to you and engage, where some of these events it's not like that, you know. And that's then I realized, like, look, these people are here on every level, whether it be the promoters or the athletes. You guys are doing this for the love of the sport, and you're really into this thing, and you're in it for the right reason, as far as I'm concerned. I was sold after that event, to the point where I'm going to be in South Africa next month, and I'm sponsored. Yeah, baby. Yeah. I told Denny at that event, I said, look, you got a good thing going on here, and I want to be a part of it in some way. I don't give a shit what kind of way. I want to be a part of this, because I think this is where it should be. This is where I think this sport should be. And again, I'm not knocking down, like you, the other side, okay? But I just think that sport, the way it is more of a cult status sport, and most people can't relate to that. And I totally relate to that. So, you know, that has nothing to do with it. I just think commercially, it's about as far as it's going to go, I think, you know? Where yet this organization, there's all kinds of potential. And I just like the feeling of it, man. You guys are, everybody was like, it was, the camaraderie there was just like intoxicating, man. And guys like you, I mean, I've connected with everyone. I've done a lot of podcasts with the people that competed in the IMBA, I mean, in that show. And great experiences every single time, man. I tell you what, you guys are amazing. But to be in that organization, I think is, in my opinion, is the right one.
Yes, sir.
You know?
I think it's one word that can actually sum all that up. It's family, man.
Yeah, family. You're right.
You know, exactly. It's family. You know, we compete against each other. I'll do a couple of name drops from John Sui, you know, William Long. No, I know these guys for years, man. Joseph, one of the new guys, he just won Olympia last year. And plus my guys from Australia and all kind of stuff. It's so weird, dude. We can see each other, and we are so happy. And time we hit that stage is nothing. It's like, I want the best for you, but I'm going to win. And time we finish, we get in the back, we hug it and high
five. I saw it.
It's such a good feeling. And I tell everybody, that's not an act. This is not an act. Because I've been with you guys for so long, so now it's like, I look forward to seeing them. Like, they know my kid's name.
I saw it. You're not exaggerating, not one bit. I saw it, you know. In fact, one of the guys that's going to be in South Africa, and I know you know this guy because you said Australia, Ken Ross.
Yes.
Ken and I are doing seminars in South Africa at some of the local gyms in the area, man. I mean, talk about family and connecting. You're absolutely 100% right. And okay, so you became a pro physique athlete, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, and I see here now that you want to now pass it forward, so to speak, I guess, and you're doing motivational speaking.
Yes.
Okay. Are you going to? Where are you doing these talks at? Just anywhere? Or where are you focusing?
Well, I'm usually hired. Somebody come, they'll ask me to go to certain places. Far as boy club, girls club. I spoke at a veterans, it was a veterans speak out. Yeah. So it was a lot of companies got together and they helped veterans go get jobs as far as LinkedIn, all these places came.
Yeah.
Spoke there. So I do red carpet, stuff like that. Anywhere I can be needed. I don't subject myself to one-sided. I keep telling people, I just don't motivate, speak about sports people. I can motivate, speak about everything. So it goes from there. And I use that because I've learned that all changes are not made in the gym.
Yeah, I saw that.
You have to. You have to really understand that. And a lot of personal trainers really need to understand that you got a big responsibility. And one of the responsibilities is to keep a person's mind exercising too.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what motivation is, such a main tool into life-changing, you know, life-changing events. If you're not motivated to do the next level, why do the next level?
Exactly. You know, one of the things I talk about with regard to motivation is I tell people the motivation has to be greater than the obstacle. Because if you don't have that, you're going to get your shit packed, you know, it's going to kick you in the ass. it'll drop you in a heartbeat. So I think you and I this has just been such an amazing interview with me. And you know what, Rock, this is like the second time I've talked to you and I already feel a connection that, like you're talking about. It just carries on.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Great. Like minds think alike, bro. Nobody on we're not here lying to each other, not trying to impress each other. Right. You know, it's real raw. And I like that. I like that off the first deal when I first met you. When I told you, like, who you? And you said you. And I was like, I like this dude, you know? And that's the kind of shit I like. You know what I mean? And what you doing, I follow you on IG. I tell a lot of people, hey, this is guy that you check him out. His tips are crazy. Like, I love your tips because you're kind of like, you're so raw with it. You know, you tell how you feel. You don't bash anybody. So, you know, what you pushing out, Leo, man, keep doing it, D. Like, you know, we watching you over here.
Nice. So, well, you know something? The question that I ask myself after being in the sport and then out of it, and then, you know, I asked myself one day, I said, how can I stay relative in this industry? Excuse me, in this industry. I have no – listen, I get up every day at 3:00 in the morning, and I'm in the gym. I'm a trained idiot like that, you know? And I just keep going in to my own gym over there, my studio. But I don't want to be that guy, you know, showing how to do exercises anymore and flexing. I don't want to do that. Not because I think it's a bad thing. That's just not where I'm at anymore. So I ask myself, how do I stay relative? Well, it's the from the 38 years of being in this industry, I've learned a lot. You know, I failed a lot and I've had good success. It's now I can pass my information forward. And that's what you see in some of the podcasts. And I'm trying to figure that out. And, you know, I wrote a blog book called Exposing Fake Trainers. And I thought maybe I'm getting a little too harsh there, you know? So I just want to come out and say what I'm feeling without getting too crazy about that. But I appreciate you. That's a really strong compliment for me because, you know, I still love this, Rock. I love it as much now, if not more, than I did when I first got into it, you know, and I'm a lucky guy. I mean, how many people can say they're excited about getting up every morning, you know, to go do what they love to do? How awesome is that? I think it's a fantastic. Yeah, man.
You got basketball players missing games, and this is what's supposed to be a dream job. And
yeah,
you know, so that's not a lot of people that's actually doing what you're doing. I'm trying to get to that level. You know, I'm getting there though. I'm watching my company Rock Lifestyle actually really flourish and the movement is really getting it. To me, it's not about the money, it's about the movement.
Yeah.
I believe all that money stuff paying itself out later. I think we need to worry more about the information now because we was worrying about the money for too long.
Yeah,
far fitness is game, man.
Yeah, if you do that, you know, again, there's different you know, thoughts and different opinions, but I think what you're saying is actually right because you're doing it with, you know, the true and right intention, all that other stuff follows you, you know, it's just a change. It's a difference when you chasing something like that and saying, look, it'll come, you know, as long as I'm doing what you're doing, motivating people, aspiring people, you're right on the money, man. And it's just a matter of time before you're going to go wherever you want because you are a people person And I connect with you because you are passionate about what you do. And that's awesome. And you're one of the good guys in the industry, man, I tell you. And because there's quite a few of them out there that don't really belong out there, you know, and that's, it's in every industry. But listen, before we go here, and besides thanking you again and over again for coming on, I really had a good time. Is there anything that you would like to promote on the show, you know, for people maybe to go find you or anything you want to promote? Now's the time to do it if you want.
All right. First of all, my name is Rashad Bailey. I'd like you guys to go to my Facebook, Rashad Bailey. Also go to my Instagram, ROC_2000, and support the company Rocks Lifestyle. I'm also partners with a company called Black Sheep Heritage. It's a transitional company that we get you help ready for a transformation to any new lifestyle. Yeah. All about information, motivation, and is also a connecting branch. So you might be able to connect to some stuff you might need on that.
Nice. So
everything's about motivation over here, man. Okay, you know, my next big show will be, I'm doing, if y'all going to be in the area, make sure y'all come to the cancer awareness show for the IMBA. All right. It's going to be in May. It's going to be my first show.
And where's that show at? Where's that show going to be at?
Man, I think it's going to be, they moved it this year.
Okay. I'll check out the, because what I did is I looked up all the events. I'm trying to be at most of the events somehow, some way, if not sponsoring, if just being there, you know, being meeting people and networking, you know, with guys like you. So I'll be looking for that in May. But otherwise, listen, we should probably do this again sometime if you got something that comes up or any kind of new breakthroughs, let's share it and let's talk about it.
Let's do this, man. Leo, you got my back, dude. Okay. So let me know what I can do. Hey, and you do the same, man. If there's anything I can do to help out, especially with your movement and stuff like that, let me know. Like I say, me and my team, we're pretty good. Black Sheep Heritage, they're really good people. All of us, man, we all about that good stuff. And what you're doing right now, man, is some real good stuff. So,
and, you know, we talked about this in the beginning. We're going to finish with this. We're all in the same boat. Okay, and we're one all with each other. We're bonded forever now. We'll see you again.
Yes, sir. We out.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.